This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin with you, Overdrive on TSN 1050, streaming on the TSN Go app. Rod Black from BMO Field a half an hour from now. The Argos host the Calgary Stampeders. And the Stamps are their usual strong selves, and they might have beaten the Tiger Cats 60-1 last week. No big deal.
Hold Argos on. Win tonight.
I like it.
Argos win tonight. What a better incentive than just beating a team that has just won 60-1 against one of your rivals. How about that message to Hamilton by Toronto?
All right. Mulls, cut the clip.
Okay.
Pooley is here tomorrow. Argos win. He
Argos
called
win.
It.
Argos win tonight.
All right.
They do.
That is the hot take. That is the prediction of the day on Overdrive. Craig Button is TSN's resident scout, and he is at the World Junior Showcase. This kicks off a fun and busy month for Craig, because I think he'll
be in Bratislava.
Oh, Bratislava. You were talking that up to me a month ago when we chatted about it. Craig, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. You enjoying your summer?
I sure am.
Good.
I enjoy all the months of the year, Scott.
I know you do. I know you do. You're trying to convince me about the good things about winter. Hockey I'm good with. It's the cold and the snow that I struggle with.
Well, you should see Mark Masters here. I mean, you would think that it's about minus 25. He's got a parka, he's got a toque on, he's got a scarf on. It's like, are you for real?
All right, so be honest. What happens when Masters Nation invades Plymouth, Michigan?
Well, I mean, it's unbelievable. First of all, have you ever seen, Dave has seen it, but Scott, have you ever seen College Game Day?
The ESPN pregame? Yeah.
It's a great show. And you know how they have all the big, the cardboard cutouts and the sticks of all the faces, right? That's what it's like in the stands. It's like people just like clamoring to get a piece of Mark Masters. It's unbelievable.
So these aren't Leafs fans looking at their future with, Liljegren playing for Sweden or Bracco or
this
Wall.
Is national and international, isn't it, Craig?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, it really. Well, I'll tell you what. Like, Mark Masters now is a brand unto himself. Forget about the Leafs.
Well, yeah,
and a first class brand, and that has a thought all to itself. Right. On the first class brand.
Yeah.
That's what sealed it. The ultimate decision to move up to first class. See ya, honey.
Leave his wife and coach.
Beautiful. And they're still together, which tells you she has the patience and the understanding of a saint. It's awesome. So what stood out to you so far, Craig, before we get into some of the more specific details?
Well, I mean, the game's on Tuesday. I wasn't here for them, but, Canada got walloped pretty good by the one U.S. team. And, coaches, and Dave knows this, you go in and you tell the players, hey, listen, we have to have a good start. Discipline is going to be really important. You got to play fast. Well, they were down 5-0 at the end of the first period. They were down 3-0 just over 5 minutes in. But I do know this, is that when Dominic Ducharme walked in to talk to the team, the second team, for the second game, I don't think he had to say a word. I think they just said, oh, yeah, that's right, okay. Let's make sure we have a good start. Let's make sure we're disciplined. Let's make sure we play fast. They did. They ended up winning 2-1. But, I think it's a great opportunity for the players, to leave an impression on the coaches. And obviously they want to leave a positive impression on the coaches. And I think that really affords them that opportunity. And, there's over 40 kids here. And, in December, when they gather for the World Junior Camp, there's going to be no more than 30. So the players here have to find a way. It's the reality of the situation. They have to find a way to leave an impression. And I think yesterday, the red group came back and they played against Finland, and they had a real good opportunity to rebound. And, the first period wasn't great, but then they did rebound and they were down late, and they found a way to tie the game. They found a way to win it in overtime. And I think that, you know, there's never a bad time to make a good impression. And I think a number of players rebounded from the game on Tuesday and did exactly that on Wednesday. And that's a positive.
It's interesting how Canada's wanted to get involved in this, Craig, because if we think back to when this started in Lake Placid, it was only the U.S., and then they started bringing over Finland and Sweden, and Canada was left on the outside a little bit for a true competitive tournament to evaluate in the summer for the World Juniors versus just their own camp.
And you know, Dave, you know, you can have all the inter-squad tournaments that you want. I mean, there is always going to be a psychological reluctance to go as hard against your own teammates, the group that you're going to be playing with in that type of an environment. And is the competitive level here the same as it will be at the World Junior Tournament? No. But I do know this, and Dave, you've seen this, and you know it as well as anybody, that, you know, the competitive level at this time of the year is equal for all players. And the players want to make a difference, and they want to show. I mean, general managers and are in the stands, and, you know, they want to make an impression on the coaches of the World Junior team. So these players aren't just here fiddling with the dials. They're here trying to really, you know, be as best as they can be for a lot of different reasons. And I think Canada realized that, you know, perhaps that was something that, you know, was an opportunity that they weren't taking advantage of. And I think absolutely they wanted to take advantage of it. Now they are. And I think that it pays dividends, you know, not only, for, you know, evaluating the players, but even to see some of the competition and for the players to see the competition and how good it's going to be and understand that, you know, it's great to say you want to win the gold at the World Junior Tournament, but you know what? There's five other countries that have the same goal and more than that are more than capable of it.
On that exact level of competition, Craig, you look at some of the individuals that choose to play where they choose to play. And Casey Mittelstadt, someone who chose to play in high school hockey in Minnesota, and over the years, some very successful guys have stayed in high school hockey and not gone, you know, to the USHL or to the development side of it. And it would have been interesting, I understand by all accounts, and I've talked to a few people, that he's off to a really good start at that tournament. And he would be a guy who would get even a little bit more scrutiny, although it's post-draft.
You're right, and let me tell you this. I mean, he has, by all accounts, and I can only go by the one game I saw yesterday, he was arguably the best player in the game. And everybody else has told me, though, through the camp that's been here and seen him in the other games, have said he has been the best U.S. player. So, you know, I think I'm a big believer that when you're evaluating players, that, you know what, you're evaluating the skills and the attributes that are necessary to have success at the National League level. And you know what, you can talk about junior hockey or college hockey or the USHL, whatever it may be. You know, Casey Mittelstadt's attributes and skills weren't any less by playing in high school. You know what, I've said it a number of times, I'll say it again. I think it's just a bunch of whining by the scouts. The job is just to evaluate the players. Casey Mittelstadt wanted to go and play high school hockey at Eden Prairie. He wanted to graduate with his class, and I think that's admirable. And I told him exactly that last year. And you know what? Scouts are always going to complain about something, and I think it's unfair to the young man, to be quite honest.
With Craig Button, TSN resident scout, he's at the World Junior Showcase in Plymouth, Michigan, and then he heads over to Eastern Europe, kind of the Prague, Bratislava area for the Ivan Hlinka a little bit later on this month. Craig, you often talk, I think we've talked about it on air, we've certainly talked about it off air, you're so familiar with a lot of these players, just having watched them for the last couple of years, talk to them, talk to their families. You know, you have an idea of the type of player they are, and yet here they come to a showcase like this, which is a gear up for what is to come later on this year, leading to the World Junior Hockey Tournament over Christmas and New Year. What is a fair assessment of a player during this showcase? You know, like, what if he underperformed? What if his bigger picture over the last couple of years has been really strong, but he doesn't quite bring it over these sets of games? That can affect and maybe inform a huge decision to come 4 months from now. It isn't necessarily fair, but it's one you may have to make.
Well, here's what I'll tell you. And Hockey Canada does a tremendous job of evaluating these players over a long period of time. And, you know, the players that are here, they've come to just about every single one of them has come through the U-17 program. They've come through the U-18 program. whether playing at the U18 championships in April, whether being part of the Ivan Hlinka team. And that evaluation continues. It continues for the players that, like a Sam Steele, who was a late cut last year for Team Canada at the World Junior Camp. They know Sam Steele, and they understand what Sam Steele can bring. And just because you don't make the team or just because you have a couple of bad days doesn't mean you're a bad player. And I think it's really important to understand what the body of work is. And Hockey Canada does understand that body of work. And I mean, no player, no competitive player on the planet is going to be happy not playing to his potential or having an off day. And I think that's another part of it. They know the competitive nature of these players. But, you know, for an example, if Michael McLeod comes in and has a couple of days where he's not at his top, they still know that he's a good player. And I think that's important. And I think the players know that. And I think it's important for the players to know that and feel that. But they're still disappointed if they don't have a good game. And, you know, but it's not the end of the world here if you don't have a good showing. You know, and to me, they're going to be watching. They've had a change in the scouting and lead by Brad McEwen taking over for Ryan Jankowski. Brad McEwen's going to have to hit the road running because Ryan really had a strong book on these players. And, you know, other people do. Dominic Ducharme returning has a good book on a lot of the players. But Brad McEwen's going to have to provide, you know, further pages to that book. And it's going to be really important for him. But I don't think, and I think it's important to emphasize, it's not going to be an end-all, be-all for the players that are here if they're not as good as people know that they can be, and certainly that the players know that they may not have been as good.
And it's less and less, Craig, that we use the term summer hockey. And you will say that from time to time, well, it is summer hockey. But summer hockey is much closer to winter hockey now than it was a short number of years ago.
It most sure is. And one of the things we got to keep in mind, too, is that, and, you know, I think it's really important. I mean, the vast majority of these players here that are here at the World Junior Summer Showcase, okay, yeah, they've been drafted. They've gone to a development camp. Well, that's a week. Okay? But most of them haven't played a game since the beginning of April. The vast majority of them haven't played a game since the beginning of April. And training is there's not an off season in terms of training. You got to keep yourselves fit. You got to continue to work at areas of your conditioning and your off ice training to get better. And they are working at that. Today was a complete off day for the players. They just had a rest day. Coaches weren't in there, you know, telling them with video or anything. They just had a nice rest day, just get everything ready in terms of their equipment and everything for tomorrow and Saturday. But the players know that they have to be ready. There's no, okay, well, let's come to camp and let's get ready and let's get through the first few days. They got to come in here with their with their motors running and get up to speed real quick. And if you're not training and in shape, you're not going to be able to do that. But I don't think they're being taxed unnecessarily either. And I think that, you know, we may think, oh, summer hockey, why are they playing all year round? These players aren't playing 12 months every single day. They've had lots of rest. And most importantly, and I think this is important to say, they want to be here. They're ready to be here. They're ready to show what they have. And they realize that to represent Canada at the World Junior Tournament is a great honor, and they want to be part of that.
Craig, is there a – we've seen a bunch of different countries come home with the gold medal over the last few years at the World Juniors. Is there a country that has emerged with a real strong class heading into December, beyond the obvious? You know, we're not necessarily talking Canada here. Is there a European nation we should really be looking at for this year in particular?
Well, here's what I would tell you, Scott. I don't think anybody's obvious. I don't think Canada's obvious. I don't think Canada goes into this tournament as a prohibitive favorite any longer. I think that Canada, the U.S., Finland, Sweden, Russia, and the Czechs have made incredible strides. The Czechs have made incredible strides in their program to be really competitive. So I think this tournament now is not about, oh boy, what do we got to do to beat Canada? You better come here with a really good team, with good goaltending, good defensemen, good forwards, good coaching, good discipline. Understand that it's going to be hard to win, and the margin for error is very, very thin. And, you know, a lot of it, Scott, is going to be Canada looks like every player that's available to them will be here. It looks that way. Now, I will allow that perhaps Tyson Jost and Nolan Patrick. You know, Nolan drafted second overall by the Flyers. Joe's who left North Dakota and played games for Colorado. Might be the two players that aren't available. Now, you allow that maybe somebody goes to training camp and does a good job. But I think for the first time in a long time, Canada very well may have all the players, or just about every player that's available to them, playing on this team. And I think that you start to lose, you know, a player here and a player there, and it makes a big difference. I mean, you go back to last year, Finland wins the World Junior Tournament in Finland. Last year, they don't have Aho, they don't have Laine, they don't have Puljujärvi, and now it changes the whole equation for them. You can't lose three good players like that. And I think other countries are dealing with that. The U.S. is going to deal with that this year. Clayton Keller doesn't look like he'll be available for them. So now these other countries are now dealing with some of the things that Canada's had to deal with over a long period of time. But this tournament, in terms of who the favorites are, there's six of all, there's five of them, and the Czechs are closing the ground real quick. But there's no prohibitive favorite.
Visiting with Craig Button, what have the Czechs done over the last few years to kind of reset things, Craig? Because, I mean, let's be honest, they have struggled internationally, really at all levels, for a little while now.
Yeah, they have. I think a big part of this is, and I think they're keeping their younger players at home now. Your younger players are developing. The young players for a long time in the Czech Republic were like wandering aimlessly in the desert. There was no real good viable junior league for them to play in. They weren't good enough to play in the pro league in Czech Republic. They were coming over to Canada to play in the CHL, and you know, you're trying to develop. You're away from your support group. You're trying to acclimate to not only a new culture but a new language. And I think it really, really impacted them in an adverse way. I think they're doing a much better job of making sure that those players are staying in Czech Republic and are getting the necessary development and support through the early ages. At this time last year, the Czechs, the Ivan Hlinka tournament was just about to get underway. And the Czechs had never won the Ivan Hlinka tournament. Well, they won it last year. They beat all the best countries in the world. I mean, there were some teams, the countries that didn't have their players. But the Czechs won the tournament last year. And I think that that's evidence that they're getting there and they are making strides. But I think it really starts internally in their own development model, how they're giving the support to those younger players. And those players don't feel like they have to leave any longer to go for development. They feel they can stay in the Czech Republic and get it.
Masters buying you dinner? How's that going to play out?
No, Mark's not going to buy me dinner. I'm going to buy him a big woolly blanket because I'm afraid that we might lose the brilliance of Mark Masters if he's too cold. I don't want to see him get frostbite.
All right, my man. Enjoy the rest of the tournament or the showcase, and then safe flight over to Eastern Europe. We'll look forward to talking soon.
Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
All right, Craig Button, TSN resident scout. He's at the World Junior Showcase in Plymouth, Michigan, the Hlinka tournament, kind of Prague, Bratislava area, a little bit later on this month.
Which is an absolutely beautiful area. So that's where the riverboat cruises go down the Danube.
Yes.
Right there. And so they've built this little, I don't know.
Are you talking Prague or Bratislava now?
Bratislava.
So this is Slovakia.
Gorgeous. Yep. Absolutely gorgeous. You're just in from Austria. You're flying to Vienna, and it's in the second week of August, and you can see the riverboat cruises going down, and you're on land, and you're in an arena a lot of the day, but it's a beautiful place.
Well, Craig and I were talking right before summer vacation began, so end of June, and we were talking about this summer and what we were going to get up to and all that, and I just threw it out there. I said, you know, Craig, in my mind, I haven't gotten there yet, but in my mind, I want to do 3 weeks in the summer of 2018 in Europe, because I never got to do it. I was one of the fortunate ones. As I was in college, I got my first radio job, so there was really no...
So you went right to work?
There was no gray area. I couldn't do the backpacking through Europe. I had a bunch of buddies who went and, you know, lived it up for 3 or 4 weeks one summer in Europe. So, I mean, they're enjoying it, and I'm in the workforce, not complaining. But now I got an opportunity where I think I might... And his eyes open up. He goes, where are you going? And I said, Craig, I haven't planned it out, but in my mind, Prague is at the center of this. And then he was like, oh, well, if you're there, you got to go to Bratislava. And then you got to get up to Budapest. Mm-hmm. And you got to do Vienna because it's all in that area. Mm-hmm. So
gorgeous. He really beautiful.
He ramped me up, man. I'm really looking forward to it.
And it's the kickoff back to the world of hockey as we know it, right? And
yes.
You come back, you still have a couple of weeks before you start, but that's where you see the U18s for the first time, or not the first time, but the first time against each other at that age that you'll be drafting the following year. It's a great, great look. It really is a great look.
Right. And the World Junior Showcase, by the way, continues on TSN tomorrow. Starts at 1 o'clock. You can watch the games on TSN 1, 3, 4, and 5. So essentially on all the stations across the network. 1 o'clock tomorrow, the resumption of the World Junior Showcase in Plymouth, Michigan.
And there's a reason Craig has as good a handle on these players as he does. You know, they ask why he has that good a handle and why they nail the draft like they do. And because he does this in the summer. He sees the U18s. He sees the pre-world, the pre-world juniors and gets to know these players to a whole different familiarity.
Right. And he doesn't just watch them play.
Well, I remember the first time we saw him over in Bratislava, it was like, what's he doing here? Like, what's his, you know, because TSN was just starting to broadcast those games. And we're like, wait a second, they're going to put these summer games on TV? This is like maybe 2010, 2011. It was like, it just didn't make sense.
Right.
To the scouts in the building and why there were TV cameras set up and why Craig would be there. But it's been an invaluable addition to our group in terms of his knowledge of those young players and what it means coming up to the draft. And, you know, the way Bob McKenzie, I had a GM this week say to me, we can't figure out how Bob McKenzie does what he does before the draft. Like, we have no idea how you guys do what you do. There's a lot of homework involved. It's not just happenstance, but they were laughing because one team specifically said to me, we always have a couple of sleepers in our top 20 that we think nobody else has, and Bob McKenzie has them. The other teams don't have them. Bob McKenzie
and he lets
them.
The cat out of the bag.
So he and Craig do just a tremendous, tremendous job with the draft, but there's a lot of homework that goes into that.
No question. Couple of news and notes from around the NHL. Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres talking on a potential 8-year contract. What do you think about that? We have no idea what the dollar figure would be, but I liked your answer to my question when we were talking before the show started. I said, if you're Jack Eichel, and it's like a $7 million a year average, just for the sake of argument, 8 and 7, why would you jump at that when you're seeing some of your peers, the McDavids, go north of 12? We presume Austin Matthews will be in the $10 million range. We know Eichel, if he stays healthy, is a dynamic player. Why would you jump at something in that range if that's in fact where it is?
$56 million.
I liked your answer. Yeah. I wanted to give you the opportunity to say that on the air. 56 guaranteed. That's all right.
You know what? The benchmark has been set with Connor McDavid, and that has been set. They still don't know where it will go with Leon Draisaitl. Could Jack Eichel affect Leon Draisaitl in terms of numbers? But you know, you've got another group weighing in, the Johansson 8.0, Kuznetsov 7.8. You've got that group weighing in as well that'll be in this mix. And so as these comps build up, you know, Eichel, for what he's done so far, he's obviously a very talented player. I think he would be in the 8 range to 9 range. I don't think it goes, you know, it doesn't go into double digits. Doesn't go to Taves and Kane for me. No, not at all. You know, those guys, they had a bridge contract in between that number two. You know, and they'd won a couple of Stanley Cups at that time, too. We can't get too far ahead of ourselves and where this is going. Now, as I say that, the Canadian dollar has strengthened over the last
short period of time.
It's had a significant, significant increase. That affects hockey-related revenue more than anything else. And, you know, when the Kane and Taves deals were signed, the cap was on its way up with an incredibly strong dollar, and the big nosedive it took was because of the strength of the 7 Canadian teams and how they contributed to hockey-related revenue. But with the Canadian dollar going up, we could see a rise in the cap in the near future, too. So then percentage-wise, you know, if you went to a flat dollar, how does Connor McDavid's contract look then when he's at that much lower percentage? So still $100 million.
He's not complaining. No question about it. Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, it's Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Coming up next, we'll go down to BMO Field for Rod Black. The Argos host the Calgary Stampeders tonight. We'll preview that. And then before we get out of here, we'll have Dave tell us the T-Box story that he teased last hour. Stay with us. Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. The Argos and the Stamps on TSN, and a game you can hear right here on TSN 1050 after this very program. Argos come in 3-3, good for 6 points, and the top spot in the East Division. You've got the Calgary Stampeders at 4-1-1, a point behind Edmonton for top spot in the West, but we know that Calgary is really a hell of a franchise, and Bo Levi Mitchell has had a tremendous career and continues to for Calgary. So a big game for the Argos tonight, especially considering the Stampeders snuck by Hamilton 60-1 in Calgary last week. Rod Black will call tonight's game with Dwayne Ford on TSN. He's down at BMO. He joins us now.
Hello,
what's up, Rod?
Scotty, how are you?
Well,
Mr.
This is,
Poulin?
You're it's like you're not on the phone.
He's
you're right in studio.
I'm actually right next door to you guys. I don't know if you know this. I'm actually broadcasting from the washroom.
Like I'm looking over.
Yeah, just the washroom, the TSN studio washroom.
So we're gonna hear the flush in a second.
Well, we heard a flush last week in the Calgary game. It was about in the second quarter.
Just mute your phone if it actually.
I'm only kidding.
I know. I can hear the music in the background. I know where you are.
Beautiful night for football, by the way.
Yeah. Well, so it stopped raining. See, we
it
don't
is
know.
Stopped raining. Yep. Yeah, and it's a little muggy. But a breeze is blowing through. I think there is a threat of rain, but it's a great night. Anywhere near the lake in the summer in Toronto. So get down here. Come down here and watch the game.
How would you assess the Argos season so far, Rod? I mean, they're in first place in their division. That's good. They're 3-3. And, I mean, Tressman and Pop came in relatively late in the off season. I think they have to be happy with where they are about a third of the way through the schedule.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it's a definite step up compared to the way they left last season off, and they had so many issues. I thought they had some infighting at the time. They certainly had a lack of continuity at quarterback with Ricky going down with injury and trying to find that magic elixir that never happened. And so, you know, it was a bit of a nightmare last year. They sprung leaks and they sunk. And I just think they're sailing again here. And I 3-3 will get you fifth place, by the way, in the CFL West right now. But it is still, like I say, a step up, and I still think they're a work in progress. The CFL season, as you guys know, is like hockey. It's in three periods, and the overtime period is the playoffs. But those 6-6-6 games, you know, the first six games, I believe, you just got to stay around 500. You know, find out what kind of team you are. The middle six, get ready for the final six. You know, make sure that you're healthy. Get some bodies back and get ready to make sure that roster is the roster for the final six. So I would say, you know, they're a 50-50 team right now. And any given night, they can win or lose. They've had a trend of winning and losing. So I guess trending up tonight is that they might knock off the Calgary Stampeders. Could they do it? I think it's going to be a bit of a stretch here tonight. The Stamps are good, but as we've seen in the CFL, anything's possible.
Rob, if I'm in that locker room, I'm looking at it and saying, what a great opportunity.
Yeah.
To send a message to the league, not just to the Calgary team.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You look at it and you say, that coming off that win, if they're not overconfident now, they'll never be. But what a great chance to just put your stamp on this and take our next step with Toronto.
I agree with you, Dave, because, you know, Montreal beat Calgary a couple of weeks ago. And hey, the 60-1, I think it was – actually, I don't think it was reflective. I thought they could have put 100 on the board last week. That's how bad Hamilton was. That was more of a reflection of how ugly it was for the Tiger Cats. The Stamps are good. I don't think they're a great team yet, and I don't even think Edmonton's a great team. Like I said, those first six, anything can happen on any given night. Hey, if you watch last week's game, up until the last minute and a half of the first quarter, it was 0-0. And then all of a sudden, the Stamps exploded in the second quarter. If the Argos, my thing is, when you're playing a good team like Edmonton and Calgary in the CFL, it's very similar to playing against the Cleveland Cavaliers when you're in the NBA. You got to get a big lead, and you got to hang on for dear life. And so I think that's what the Argos have to do. They have to start fast, you know, keep the Stamps offense off the field, and build up a 10 to 15 point lead, and then hang on.
I've been patiently waiting for that to happen at BMO Field, too, and I've been down to a couple games and waiting because I think it's a perfect environment. I go back to the 1970 teams outdoors in Exhibition Stadium with 50,000 people in that stadium watching the Argos play, and what a great little football stadium they have now, and I do think it's just a matter of time for Toronto to realize what they have down there, what an environment it is, and that'll only help the team's cause.
I agree with you, and I... you know, I'm just looking out now and you see the fans and the tailgate. This is the first time actually I walked around the tailgate section and it's fabulous. Do I think they should sell tailgating solely? No, but I think there's a lot of things that they can bring to the yard here. And I think there's still a few more things that they can do and try to create an atmosphere like they have in Ottawa where everything around the stadium is bent on entertainment. And I think they can still do that here. But the bottom line is it's winning. And if you can put a winning product on the field and people are talking about the Argos, they were talking about the Argos last year, but in a very negative way. And keep in mind, that what a terrible way to open your stadium. And this is a nice place. And, hey, the soccer fans get it. They pack this place. And there's no reason to think that CFL football fans can't either. It is. I think it's one of the most intimate, charming venues in our country for any sport.
With Rod Black, who will call the Argos and Stamps on TSN later on this evening from BMO Field. So tonight's game will feature two of the top three quarterbacks in terms of passing yards so far this year, Rod. And the guy at the top is more than 300 yards better than the second place guy. Ricky Ray has 2,282 passing yards. Trevor Harris, 1939, and then Bo Levi Mitchell, Calgary's quarterback, 1832. I suppose it all comes down to health for Ricky, but his performance so far this year, I mean, I remember there was some debate when Jim Popp and Mark Trestman came in and they said, he's our guy. And we were like, well, how can you count on that? He's been so injury prone the last couple of years. Well, he's been healthy. And he's been unbelievable at 38.
Yeah, and he has been. And I, you said it right there. And I think as much as he's healthy, and that's obviously key for Rick, but the biggest thing for Ricky Ray is the fact that he has a coach who just buys into a system that is meant for Ricky Ray. Mark Trestman, everywhere he's gone, with every quarterback he's been, whether an assistant coach or as a head coach here in the CFL and the NFL, has gotten good things out of his quarterbacks. And they call him the quarterback whisperer for a reason, but he's the kind of offense that they put on the field with Tommy Condell calling the shots as well. And it's very similar to what happened with Anthony Calvillo in Montreal. Same kind of offense, but now Ricky Ray's also stretching the field. It's just not dinking and dunking in those short passes that we saw so much ad nauseum, guys, last year. We saw so many short passes. They're short passing, then they're stretching it out, and they're exciting. There's fireworks. There's some offense that every single night that you come here, there's excitement. And I think S.J. Green has also helped a lot because he gives Ricky Ray that outlet, which he never had, certainly last year or the last couple of years. And so, yeah, there's a buzz here. And it's interesting, you know, Ricky against Bo Levi Mitchell. Bo Levi Mitchell probably will be in the Hall of Fame someday. Ricky Ray is an instant Hall of Famer. There's 10 years between the two guys, and Bo Levi Mitchell already has the highest winning percentage in CFL history. So you're right. It's a duel of two gunslingers here tonight.
I love the beauty of that rivalry because you know Ricky Ray knows that.
Yes,
and
he does.
He's closer to 400 yards a game right now than he is to 300 yards, and he's going to remind the young guy on the other side that he's not done yet.
Yeah, Ricky Ray, I don't know, Dave, if you play with somebody like that or it reminded you of in hockey of everybody calls him unflappable and cool, and he is that ice man. And Bo Levi Mitchell is very similar to that as well because he doesn't get rattled too often. But, you know, deep beneath those eyes, there's a fierceness to Ricky Ray that I don't think a lot of people see. He is a winner. The guy came into the CFL back in 2002, and that's all he has done is win. And last year and the last couple of years with the injuries and the losing, it drove him nuts. He'd never show it, but he's that kind of guy.
Rod Black will call tonight's game, Argos and Stamps, on TSN from BMO Field. You can also listen to the game with Mike Hogan right here on TSN 1050. Be remiss, Rod, while we have you, not to get a thought on Hamilton. I love that June Jones is on the scene now. This takes me back to my youth. NFL run-and-shoot offense. Yeah. I mean, I remember he was a head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. He went off to the University of Hawaii. So
yeah, he was the guy.
I mean, you know, where do you see him fitting in with the Tiger Cats now as they bring him in kind of desperate for a turnaround here at 0-5?
Well, I can see him even being backup quarterback. No. I know. He is one of the architects. You know, he and Mouse Davis and others are the architects. And think about the guys who have come from Hawaii through the years and all the college players that have played in the CFL and have had, you know, have had their careers navigated by June Jones. I mean, he is one of those guys that will bring some excitement. Hamilton has been awful, and I'm shocked by that the fact that they're awful. You know, they're off to slow starts every single year. That doesn't surprise me. But the way they have played, the way they have not played this year has been rather shocking. So Kent Austin is not, you know, he's been around the bush before a few times. He knows what he needs. And so right now, he's got to get some help. And believe me, if they lose tomorrow night, you guys, there could be more changes in Hamilton because, you know, they're staring down the barrel at 0-6, and they're playing against the Eskimos, and they're coming off a 60-1 drubbing. I think they're going to be a much better team tomorrow night because I think they have it in them. But they need something. They need to get Zach Collaros going, and maybe June Jones could be the guy that provides that antidote.
0-5, and I know they lost last week by 59 points, but to have a negative 111-point differential 5 games into your season.
Terrible.
Yikes. All right, my man, we'll be watching tonight. Look forward to it. Thanks for this.
Hey, you know what? You guys have time. You're off the air at 7. You get your butts down here.
I live nearby, Rod.
There you go.
Get down.
Exactly. Poulin doesn't either.
Last time in, I rode my bike over. It was great. Big Green made the road trip.
Hey, if you ride your bike over from the studio right now, you'll get here on Tuesday. So, you know what?
With traffic, I might beat it.
All right, see you guys.
All right,
enjoy.
Rod Black and Dwayne Ford will have the call. Argos and Stamps on TSN tonight. Listen to the game as well right here on TSN 1050. Why don't we take the break now? We'll come back. We've got the big T-Box story. So you have
Now you've built it up so much.
You've sold this on air and off. So I'm counting on you, Pooley, to pull us through here.
You have to come up with a story in the next 3 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. Could you imagine? Could you imagine we come back?
I have a good story.
And you say, no, there was actually nothing to that.
Just a funny story.
All right, here we go. Dave Poulin with me. Scott MacArthur on Overdrive. Stay with us. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Before the big T-Box story to close out today's show.
I love pressure.
We'll start with today's best bets brought to you by Proline, and I'm throwing this out there just in case this ticket doesn't work out. It, too, has been influenced by Dave Poulin, and that's because I'm calling a close one down at BMO Field tonight. I'm calling a tie, so within 3 points either way, the Stamps and Argos, that's paying $3.40. I like Houston in MLB, home to Tampa Bay, and the Royals as they continue their playoff push. They've got a wild card spot right now, I think the second one. They're home to Seattle, take Kansas City at home. $20 will pay you $152.40. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. Proline, get way into the game.
What would you have won had you picked the Argos to win outright?
A little less.
Oh, really?
Because the Argos straight up, so 4 points, was paying $3.30.
Okay.
So I actually grew the ticket a little
nice.
Bit here.
Nice.
I was kicking myself because I think I took the Argos at home over the Red Blacks a week or so ago, and it ended up within 3 points.
Yeah, great finish.
Right? So had I taken the tie, and as I was sitting here with no objective data in front of me, but I was thinking to myself, take the tie. Nah, I'm going to take the Argos at home.
Because they'd had a close one already.
Up in Ottawa, because it went to overtime.
Right,
so I was kicking myself. All right, the T-Box story.
So we've got
4 minutes.
Okay, so it starts with Steph Curry playing in his web.com.
Four over 74 today at the Ellie Mae.
It's pretty respectable. And when you stand on the tee box for the first time, now he's played in outings, a number of outings, but the first time I played in a pro-am, there's people lining the tee box on both sides. It's unnerving. It's really unnerving. You know people that really have phobias about the first tee. And a lot of the clubhouses, there's a patio right beside the first tee. Our place is a beautiful patio. Everyone's out there chirping you while you tee off. I mean, it's absolute. Stephen Hines was a young Boston Bruin. Stephen Hines and Teddy Donato came back from the 92 Olympics and went straight to the Bruins. Both Boston kids. Their mothers would pick them up when they came home from road trips. They were both living at home. It was hilarious, okay? Just hilarious.
They must have wore that a little
Are
bit
you
in the
kidding
locker room.
Me? They were arguing over who was paying less room and board. Like, one was paying like $25 a week while he was playing in the NHL, room and board. The other one moved back into his bedroom, and his brother, they shared a bedroom. It was great. While he was in the NHL, yeah. So humble kids, both, needless to say. So one day I invited Steven Hines to play at the Country Club in Brookline, which is where the 88 Ryder Cup was, you know, just a tremendous golf course. And when you call yourself the Country Club, that pretty much says it all, doesn't it? And so you get there, and I'm not exaggerating, Scotty, there's polo ponies off on the right. There's like a 10-year-old kid with a blue blazer and khaki shorts having lunch.
Oh, like this is golf.
It is the Country Club.
To the umpteenth degree.
Exactly. So Steven is really nervous. But I've played with him, and he's a pretty good player. So we get over to the first tee, and it's removed from the clubhouse. Now, some people have first tee phobias, right? You said you don't like when the starter watches you.
Yeah, I just don't want. I don't want to watch. I don't want old man watching me spike it 30 yards down the.
Right. So we tee off, and I go first, and Cam Neely was playing with us, and he goes next, and then our host goes third. Steven's last. So Steven gets up, and I can see his hand shaking as he tees the ball up.
So how were the first three tee?
Fine. Everything was good.
So he had to live
up to it. From the clubhouse. It's, I don't know. It's 100 yards from the clubhouse, the first tee. It's way off. Hits it 10 feet. Okay. He's shaking. So I said, Hinesy, just relax. You know, you're playing at the Country Club. Everything's good. So I throw him another ball. Hits it 12 feet. Comes over and he says, oh, geez, Pooley, I didn't know those two guys are going to be standing watching us. I said, Hinesy, they're the caddies. They're coming with us. They're going to watch every shot you take.
All 170 of them.
Never had a caddy. He had no idea what that guy was doing with his clubs, but he was unnerved by the fact that the caddies were going to be watching him play that day.
Oh, poor Steven Hines.
He resurfaced, but living in his hometown.
Yeah.
Played at Boston College, never left home. Played at Boston College, then got drafted by the Bruins, played for the Bruins. Teddy Donato, local kid from Dedham, Mass. Played at Harvard, right to the Bruins. Like, think about that. It's crazy.
Wow. Dedham, Mass. Stayed there in the 2013 World Series. That's not that close to, but it's 30, 45 minutes out.
30 minutes.
But essentially, hometown for both guys.
But first tees are very unnerving for people. They just are. So Steph Curry, he's used to playing in front of a crowd, but
The difference.
He's not used to everybody being quiet when he tees it up.
Well, and the difference, Pooley, for some people is that the first tee shot, there isn't much about your game that changes the rest of the 18 holes.
Oh, yes, there is.
Not with me. I'm dreadful from start to finish. I remember I played with Mike Eastwood in Ottawa one day, and I was telling him, warning him, we got to get out quick, so I got to make this quick. I was warning him about how bad I was, and then I parred the first hole. He's like, you're sharking me.
Sandbag. Sandbag written all over.
Ended up shooting about 115. So there you go. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Yes,
look forward
to
it. Dave Poulin, Scott MacArthur on Overdrive. We're back at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Naylor and Landsberg in the morning, tomorrow morning at 6. The Argonauts are next. Stay with us. TSN 1050, the TSN Go app.